Welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast currently being audited by the Doge Boys. It's kind of an odd situation here, folks. We've got, you know, some sweaty 19-year-olds rifling through the stuff down here at the Anime Death Spiral production office. They're putting their little Cheeto fingers all over my stuff.
Yeah, luckily when we leave the severed floor, our Audis won't remember any of this, so it'll be great. You know how it's been a week for you guys? It's actually only been 2 minutes for us.
We're on some time compression shit right here.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we don't actually know anything about why these children are here auditing our department. And ignorance is bliss.
The weird thing is that they actually appear to be growing younger before my very eyes. Yeah, when they got here, they were like college graduates. They were like mid-20s. Now they got pimples and acne and shit. They're going through puberty again, like right in front of me.
Their haircuts are getting worse by the second. I am truly astounded. It's incredible. And their anime knowledge stops in 2018.
Jesus.
Yeah, weird.
No wonder they're fascists.
Yeah. Are you telling me these kids have never seen Mnemosyne?
Come on. Like, everybody's seen Mnemosyne.
Mnemosyne?
Yeah.
Come on.
Household
look,
name.
Are you telling me my boss has never even heard of Hibane Renmei? Are you fucking kidding me? This is where we're at in life? The indignities never end. Jesus Christ.
It is just been another great time living in this version of reality. And I think the worst part, definitely the worst part of this whole political hellscape right now, is the lack of good anime to distract me from it, right?
Yep, I know.
Now, we've gone over this the last few episodes, but this season, Winter 2025 anime has not been great. There has been just an absolute dearth of quality stuff. But something was tickling me at the back of my mind.
Not your throat?
Not in my throat, no. hey, haven't you heard COVID's over? Like, nobody's worried about that anymore.
Oh, it doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
No. Oh, great.
Yeah,
phew.
No, we Bidened that right out of here.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. No, I keep having this itch, like, it can't be. It can't be this bad, this anime season, because, like, we've gone through it. Zenshu, that was a bust. Sakamoto Days, that was a bust. Those were supposed to be the big names, right? And those were totally lost on me, at least.
Also, Red Ranger in the Other World, of course.
Well, sure. For
you
all
keep
the,
forgetting about that one.
For all the Super Sentai fans out there. Unfortunately, nobody is as big of a Red Ranger fan as I. And so really, if it weren't for me propping up the Power Rangers franchise on principle, I don't think we'd even be where we are today.
And yet you still haven't watched it.
I can't bring myself to. I'll sit back quietly and support it as an ally should.
You've grown weak, old man.
No, the age.
Weak and brittle in your anime resistance.
You know, I can't.
Soon you will crumble to dust.
I honestly can't argue with that. It feels like every day, every moment, more and more, I have this feeling growing that maybe anime is like cartoons made for little baby people who can't process the world correctly.
Well, I said it many, many times, but the whole reason I even wanted to do this show in the first place was to provide some kind of alternate space where people could get good opinions about anime. And I stand by that, because when I look out at the sea of anime commentators, oh boy, what a fucking wasteland. I mean, look, I'm sorry, guys. You know, no disrespect intended, but like,
oh God, he's starting beefs.
We need some adults in the room. You know what I mean?
Listen, the grown-ups are here and we're going to put order to right.
The grown-ups are talking.
Yeah. I feel like maybe that is coming off a little too arrogant. Listen, we're not your enemy. We're not the enemy here.
You think
here.
That's condescending?
Condescending
and paternalistic?
Just a little bit. Listen, I'm also not saying it's not undeserved.
Daddy's home.
Hey, listen, I've watched a lot of anime. I know a lot of people who have watched a lot more anime than I have. And let me tell you this, buddy. I wouldn't be on a boat with any of them.
If you tried me for anime crimes, you could not find a jury of my peers. You know what I mean?
We're the Luigi Mangione of anime.
Okay, all right.
Oh, was that a little too political for you?
Well, who are you saying we're going to kill? Who's your target?
Okay, all right, let's move on from here.
You didn't think that far ahead, did you? Okay, all right. You're going to put the assassination on some of these shows? That's what you mean?
Yeah. I'm going to turn my 3D printed gun on anime itself.
He's sweating so hard.
I really am. Oh, God. I hope you edit this part out. No, what I was originally trying to get at is I keep having this itching feeling in the back of my mind that there's got to be something. There's got to be something this season that has some value, some inkling of quality that I can latch on to. Now, as I've stated, I am currently still keeping up with Okitsura, or I cannot understand what the fuck this chick is saying, but I like her anyway. That is not good. I'm not going to sit here and say that.
No,
that's not good. Quality anime, but
that premise is not good.
It's not. No,
even,
it's not good.
Even outside of the show, it's not good.
But I guess I just need to qualify that with I'm also not a good person, nor am I a good critic of media.
Well, we've never tried to argue that.
Yeah, neither points.
Neither of those.
But there's got to be something, and so. It is with a heavy heart that I have to confess that I went back and started watching more premieres.
He double dipped.
I double dipped at the midway season. We're about
Jesus.
6-7 episodes in through most of the core releases of Winter 2025. And I had to go back. I had to go back because there had to be something, right?
Oh, sure. There's got to be something.
There's got to be something. And so I watched two more premieres. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about them, because I think that they each do have something, but just spoilers, I guess. It's not enough. It's never enough. But we'll save that. Let's start here. The first thing that I watched, because I am a horrible little genre slot piggy, and I love my bad high school rom-coms, I watched Medaka Kuroiwa is Impervious to My Charms.
Now, this has nothing to do with Madoka Box.
It has nothing to do with Madoka Box.
Okay, that's strike
Nor
one.
Nor does it have anything to do with Madaka, the small Japanese fish that lives in rice fields. I had to look that one up, but that's a thing.
This is strike two.
That's strike two. Nothing to do with fish. What it does have to do with is... It is about, and this is, I think they're trying to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek here, but it's about a girl in high school, a super popular girl. In fact, the most popular girl in her prefecture.
Great.
They make, yeah.
Lucky her.
Her name is Kawaii Mona. Her family name is literally Kawaii. That's how cute and perfect she is. Her name is literally Mona Cutie, I guess we could localize that as.
Yikes.
She is a self-described queen bee type, and I mean that in a literal sense. She has, like, daydreams of where she imagines all of her little high school classmates sycophants as, like, drone bees that do her bidding.
Cool.
She's a malignant narcissist, is what she is.
Sure, sure. Not an uncommon character in these manga and anime.
No,
there's one in almost any of them.
Well, the first thing that came to mind for me is that she's highly reminiscent of the main character from His and Her Circumstances, Kare Kano.
Sure.
Where she is, obsessively concerned with her own public perception and her self-perception.
Yes, though that is driven by a sort of anxiety based on inferiority. She has an inferiority complex because when she leaves home, she's a slob and she's she lives in an apartment.
Yeah,
and her life sucks shit, and she's desperate to maintain the illusion of being the
queen.
That
is, I think, in Kari Kano, I think that's the quality that makes the character somewhat work, because it's the hook of sympathy that the audience can latch onto, right? That's the humanizing part.
Yeah.
This chick, Mona, does not have that side. She is very full of herself, and she knows it, to the point where they make a point in her introductory backstory of saying that she was so popular that even other babies at the hospital where she was born were just fawning over her. She's Christ. She is Christ, basically.
She is supernaturally popular.
Yeah, she is supernaturally popular.
Yeah.
Yes. And here's the thing. The story of the anime is about the titular Madaka Kuroiwa, who is the new transfer student at her high school. I think you can guess where this is going. He's not impressed by her shit. In fact, he's given her the stink eye all day.
He's the loner bad boy who transfers into class. That is the most powerful social position you can ever find yourself in.
Well, and you can even tell that he is in a position of power because he is placed in the protagonist seat in the classroom. Back left, next to the window.
Back left?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Uh-huh.
When you sit in the back left, that's transfer student vibes.
That's big main character energy.
Just like in an airplane, you really want a window seat if you find yourself in an anime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can see it all going down before the inevitable crash.
Yeah, when you spot the pretty girl you fall in love with out the window, or alternatively, the horrible monster man that is killing everybody at the front gate.
Oh, man.
One of those two. Depends on what your genre is.
You know, Laurie Strode. She was in the main character seat. She was back left.
Oh, she was back left?
Yeah, she was back left. That's where you get the iconic looking out the window at Michael Myers dono. And so, I don't know. I was initially intrigued by the premise because it is very much tongue-in-cheek in demonstrating that this character is very self-aware in her, narcissism. I'm trying to think of another character I could compare her to. Just she's the hottie. She has the you humans attitude, on the inside. That's her. Yeah. That's her internal monologue.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And
Mary Antoinette vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this guy, Madaka, it drives her crazy that she cannot get under his skin because he's the only boy in school who isn't part of her fan club, isn't constantly at her beck and call. And not just the boys either. They do that whole thing with the female students where she has a little flying monkey sycophant crew of mean girls that are constantly hovering around her that she's Ira. She's like Ira.
Sure. A destiny child.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, a self-deluded destiny child.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely self-deluded. And so this is it's really eating at her. How can I get this guy to pay attention to me? A, pay attention to me. B, like me. C, love me. Because it is it's gnawing at her ego that whenever she tries to flirt with him or talk with him, he's just constantly hey, can you get the fuck out of my space? I'm not into this.
Get out of my fucking face.
I'm just trying to be chill here. Can you get out of my personal zone?
Wow, I really relate to this dude.
well, wait until you make that judgment. Because again, I don't know, this whole setup is what interests me. I like the antagonistic nature of a dude who does not give a shit about the popular girl. I think that's charming. I think that's kind of funny. I like that she's self-aware about her own narcissism and she uses it to her advantage. You manipulate people.
Sure, a sociopath.
Yeah, well, it really backs off of that after the first episode. I watched the first couple.
Oh, okay.
They really, at a certain point, they're like, actually, wait, we can't make her be entirely, like,
actually
evil.
Psychopathic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they pull up on the stick.
Like, we have to give her some redeeming qualities. And I was like, okay, maybe I can chill with this. Maybe this can be, like, a funny gag. Except that they, A, immediately veer into pervert stuff.
Great.
I was not expecting it to be, like full on. It's not quite ecchi, but she is doing the whole, like, all right, I'm going to accidentally splash water on my shirt, and that's going to fluster him because he can see my bra. Or I'm going to talk to him on a really windy rooftop while wearing my short skirt. And I'm like, okay, I see where this is going. I don't like it, but you're not being subtle about it.
Okay.
And then it pulls out what finally made me like decide, like, okay, no, this is bad. This is just like all the others this season.
What could it be?
Turns out Madaka Kuroiwa, who is impervious to her charms.
Uh-huh.
Is not actually impervious to her charms.
Wow, who could have seen that coming?
I know. In fact, he's super pervious to her charms.
He is in fact pervious.
he's perviousing all over the place.
Oh man.
And
great. Yeah.
Well, okay, now sure. Hold on. There's one more twist.
There's another piece of this puzzle?
Yeah, there's another piece of this puzzle. Now, here's the thing. He's actually super perving on her, but the reason that he's giving her the silent treatment and the stink eye all day is because he is an incel in the most literal sense of the word. He is I'm quoting his character right now. He is an heir to a shrine in rural Japan and is forbidden from falling in love or getting involved with women.
Wow, that sucks, dude. What a bummer.
It really sucks. Also, it kind of puts a damper on stuff like Love Hina that we were just talking about before the show, right? Where it seems that generally when you come with the shrine, you're supposed to fall in love with whoever takes it over, right? But this guy, he apparently can't do any of that shit.
He has to preserve his vital essence for the magic rituals or whatever.
Yeah. Well, no, they don't. It's not magic. They're making a hard line, like, he is more like an indentured monk than anything. It is not a fantasy series. Like, he's essentially a religious bureaucrat in training.
Wait, are you saying vital essences aren't real?
I'm saying that maybe it's something that's on the inside and not something that you can bottle up, if you know what
okay,
I mean.
Okay, bro. Uh-huh. All right. Married guy over here.
So when he's giving her the stink eye, that's actually him concentrating all of his willpower and chi into not being horny for this girl.
Sure. Well, I'm glad that at least it's like a shrine thing instead of one of these guys who's like, kill all normies, which I'm getting really fucking sick of.
Well, I'm reading.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is he also a kill all normies guy?
No, he's not a kill all normies guy. You
okay,
just reminded
thank God.
Me of
oh, thank God.
Like half of the protagonists of Gyaru romance manga that I've been reading. Specifically, my first girlfriend is a gal.
No.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that main character is like objectively out loud, outspoken, like, I hate women. I hate normies. This chick is like pretending to be my girlfriend so that she can secretly like make fun of me or like get me in a position where she can let the blood drop in a carry sense, right?
Yeah. People who think like that need to be put in re-education camps. I there's no sympathy. No fucking sympathy.
No, yes.
Okay, this is awful. I hate this, and it's so boring.
Yeah, it's not
great.
The
worst possible thing that could have happened. Honestly, when you said it, I was really hoping it was going to turn out much like that manga I told you about, that he's actually gay.
That's what I was thinking of the entire time I was watching it, that exact thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, this would be so funny if the reason that he's, like, totally ignoring this chick is because he's just straight up not attracted to her, or, like, not attracted to women.
You are barking up the wrong tree, lady.
I guess in that scenario, there would be less of a reason for him to be, like, outright antagonistic to this girl, because she's not, like, being mean to him, at least not publicly perceptibly. And the gag, obviously, as it goes on, is that, first of all, she does not know that he is a shrine, a monk, a caretaker.
Of course, he's a transfer student. He's a transfer student. Badass transfer student.
And she cannot get her claws into him, and that's driving her crazy. And so she legitimately begins to fall for him, like the minute he starts doing this whole act. And he's just over here consistently, like, saying his prayers under his breath so that he doesn't pop a boner in front of the class while he's doing math problems.
Oh, honey. Yeah, a million times more interesting if he's gay. I've been saying I really like that manga I found, because I've always thought the premise is much more interesting, because so many anime and manga about gay men, gay boys, etc., are all romance comics, right? None of them are allowed to just be a gag comic, or even, like, just a drama that is not about their sexuality. Like, gay men are kind of not allowed to just exist unless they themselves are the joke. So I really liked when I found that manga about, oh, the reason I hate this is because I am gay and these women can't stop coming on to me.
I mean, that is a great premise.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is still inherently about that character's sexuality, because the joke is that he's, you know, a protagonist in a standard harem manga, but he doesn't actually like women. Like, that's the gag.
Yeah, but
which is great.
But the joke is not that he is, like, an effeminate boy or whatever. The joke is that he is a normal person who is not interested in these women who are throwing themselves at him.
And that's,
I think that is a fundamentally different kind of joke.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we've come a long way, especially in those terms in anime. But like, we're just getting around in, like, current Hollywood pop culture. Like, within the last 10 years, we're just getting around to the idea that gay people are just, like, people,
like, who
go to work and eat cereal and shit.
Adam and Steve is still within living memory.
Oh, God. I mean, the Man Show is still within living memory.
Yes, I know.
So, and culturally, morally, I might say, anime and manga has been somewhat, like, behind.
Hey, you know, you're telling me the One Punch season 3 promos are pretty, pretty prisoner. Boy.
Yeah.
Still grappling with that one.
So I don't know. I think that this show really fucking sucks. That's what I think.
It sucks. Thank you for telling us about this piece of shit show.
Well, someone had to do
okay.
it. But yeah. It was not the only thing that I watched. It was not the only thing that I watched.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
There's more. I know. I know you're standing on the edge of your seat waiting for me to tell you about Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf.
God.
Yeah. And
oh, God.
Well, you know, you were so excited to tell me about those isekai that you were watching last episode that I decided to get in on the action.
Oh, you got all pumped up about it.
I'm like, okay, maybe I can do the isekai thing. Maybe I can make this work.
I'll start soft. I'll go with a reverse isekai.
Well, that's the thing. This is a reverse isekai.
Uno?
Uno reverse card.
Holy shit.
Okay. This is about Kazuhira Kitase, our main character, who, according to him, is a mild-mannered salary worker who likes to go home on time because he doesn't care about getting promoted, because his main hobby, you want to guess what his main hobby is?
Watching isekai anime.
Close. His main hobby is sleeping.
Oh, okay, sure. I'm not sure that's a hobby, but I'll just go with you.
No, there's a twist. Follow me here. Because you see, when Kazuhiro falls asleep, he gets isekai'd to a fantasy world. Oh, didn't see that coming, did you?
Oh, the dream isekai. Okay, all right.
Yeah, this is a very underrepresented subgenre of isekai, I would say. The dream isekai. Every time he falls asleep, he wakes up in a fantasy world filled with dragons and mages, and he's an adventurer, and he goes on little quests and sells his wares. So there's a couple... First of all, I want to start off saying that there's a couple world-building things that they threw in here that I was not adverse to in the way that I normally am to stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
In these generic, like, isekai kind of power fantasy stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all,
what is it?
Well, first of all, it's not a power fantasy. When he goes to the fantasy world in his dreams, like, he's just a guy. He's not, like, the fated hero. He doesn't have cheat powers. He doesn't, sure, like, know magic inherently. He has to learn it.
Uh-huh.
He's just, like, some dude, which I think is kind of cool. And he understands how the world works, which they demonstrate by the fact that he can speak multiple languages when he's in his dream, because he's actually taken the time to learn them. He can speak with monsters.
Yeah, but so can I. What the fuck? I could speak made-up languages in my dream.
Well, it's not really a dream, though, is it? It's a real living fantasy world that he goes to.
Oh, you're spitting some fucking Nemo's Slumberland shit at me, huh?
Well, he kind of does have the Nemo and Slumberland power, right? He goes to a fantastical world through the power of his dreams. Like, he physically transports there.
Through the mind prism.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You know, the other thing that interests me about it is that it really leans into, like, the weird monster designs, I guess. I don't know. There's just some cool things. Like, it's not just your generic, like, little green goblin men that try to jump out and rob him. A la Goblin Slayer. Like,
sure.
They've got these weird little three-tongued lizards that are all over the place, kind of like weird salamanders. They have weird bug eyes.
Yeah, okay.
You can just tell they put a little bit of thought into making this world feel a little less generic.
Okay.
Second, they do not espouse any of the standard, like, Dragon Quest, like, video gamey kind of mechanic tropes that are so common in these. They're really trying their best to make it more like an Earthsea. And I don't want to give it that much credit. They're no fucking Ursula K. Le Guin over here.
Yeah, hold on. Let's not go that far, man.
They're not even a Goro Miyazaki over here. But it feels like they're trying to lean away from being as explicitly, like, bog standard generic as they can, which is appreciated. So, okay, they have a dragon character, right? And it's pretty standard for dragons in anime to have sexy human forms, right?
Oh, you're telling me. Boy, I could tell you about some sexy dragons.
We know you...
Don't even get me started.
We know you know your sexy dragons well enough. You've demonstrated.
In fact, there was an anime last season all about sexy dragons.
We'll not get into that, nor are we going to get into maid dragons. This is different. I mean, it's not that different. It is a dragon that turns into a sexy lady, but...
Yeah, come on.
The way in which she transforms from dragon into human, like, was so weird and gross that I was, like, kind of charmed by it.
Yeah.
When the dragon wants to turn into their sexy human form, they, like, vomit up a giant pile of magical goo that turns into kind of like an alien chrysalis pod, and then the sexy human form comes out of it.
Okay, that's all right. I don't hate that.
And like the dragon is mind controlling the sexy human body like a puppet. I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was a neat little spin.
That's all right. That's better than just like shape shifting, I guess. That's pretty boring.
Yeah. And so, you know, stuff like that, just weird little touches. I guess I kind of like the fact that they point out that he ages different. He ages at different rates in each world, because in like the regular waking world where he's a boring ass office worker, he's like 25, but he's still like 14 in the fantasy world, because he only spends like a third of his time there. And so he only ages at a third of the rate.
Huh, Severance again.
Yeah.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Okay, I do have to stop you because we are not getting to the fireworks factory. This is called Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf. I think we're going to have to get to Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf.
Okay.
At some
All right.
point here.
This brings us to the central focal point of the first episode. And that is, ever since he was a little kid, he just thought that this was a weird power, a secret little thing that only he had, where he falls asleep and he gets to go on these magical dream adventures. He has been assuming this entire time that the fantasy world that he goes to is in fact just like his super awesome lucid dream where he can't control anything or do anything like outrageous. He's just, again, some guy. But he assumes that it's just a cool dream that he gets to walk around in and make friends with elves and dwarves and monsters, until he and his elf friend, his adventuring partner, an elf mage, go into a dungeon to try and look at magical dragon eggs because they heard that they're, I don't know, beautiful and valuable or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And they encounter the dragon. And the dragon's like, oh, fuck no. And burns them both alive with its magic fire breath. Kind of what dragons do.
Yeah.
And so he discovers that not only does he go back to the human world when he falls asleep in the fantasy world. That's how he transports. You know, he lives one day in the real world and one day in his dream world.
Yeah, that's how it works for me, too.
Well, turns out that in these adventures, whenever he would get jumped by monsters or otherwise die in the way a fantasy person would, he just wakes up, like, in the real world.
Also how I dream, yes.
Well, he happened to be holding on to his elf friend in this particular situation where they got cooked alive by dragonfire, and he discovered that he actually has the power to pull people with him back to reality. Or the human world, or whatever you want to call it.
Seems very bad.
Thus, welcome to Japan, Miss Elf. Here we come to the biggest and probably my favorite aspect of this show, because it is trash, but it's not a reverse isekai, nor is it a regular isekai. It's a stealth cooking show.
Another stealth cooking show. Wow.
Yep.
How many times is this going to happen this season?
And,
Jesus Christ.
And he
really buried the lead very deep here.
Upon bringing this elf into our world, she is immediately smitten and taken aback by human food, because
it's got MSG.
Well, it's they don't outright say it, but they keep saying over and over. They remark upon the fact, like, yeah, fantasy food sucks. It's so bland and flavorless. I cannot believe how these fucking peasants live like this. I'm so glad I get to go back to modern day Japan and like eat kombini food.
Dorito peasant a million times. That's funny, because actually in one of the manga that I really like that I've been reading, basically exact same thing happens in reverse. A bunch of quote-unquote modern day people are in this like fantasy village, and our main characters are eating the food, and they come up to him and they're like, how do you eat this fucking slop every single day? It's fucking disgusting. I'm trying not to throw up right now. And they're like, what? It's just bread.
Yeah, but it's filled with sawdust and maggots.
Yeah, it's like it's gruel, you fucking idiots.
I mean, that this is the real premise of the show, is Miss Elf is absolutely enamored with human cooking. And so it started off with him bringing, I guess that's the other aspect I forgot to mention. He is, for some reason, the only thing he's allowed to bring with him into the dream world is food. He can't bring his own clothes. They get, like, magically turned into peasant clothes when he goes there.
Sure.
He can't bring, like knives or weapons or even pencils and pads of paper. But he can bring bentos full of homemade food. And that's what he, like, brings with him to eat, again, because the fantasy world food is so bland and disgusting that he can't stomach it.
So you love this show. That's what you're saying.
I think that maybe
you love this show.
I don't want to say that. I can't say that. I refuse to say that.
You found a show you really like this season, and it's basically the exact same of the elf who only eats French fries show from what was that, last season, two seasons ago.
Well, it's closer to that than I'm comfortable with, because they also do the very predictable gag of, when he pulls her into the human world from his dream, for some reason, like, when he goes to the fantasy world, his clothes turn into fantasy clothes, but when she comes to our world, she's naked.
Of course. Yeah, no, naturally. I mean, come on. Of course that's what happens.
I mean, I can't think of any other scenario that would play out. That's just makes sense to me, I suppose. And so it is parts of them trying to, like, brute force the rules of his, like, isekai teleporting power, which is actually another thing that I kind of like about this. It's not just about the food. It is like a subplot going on through at least both of the episodes that I watched, that they are confused about his ability to travel between worlds and are trying to figure out why he has it and what the actual, like, hardline rules are. Because when he goes to sleep, he wakes up in the exact same position and spot that he was in when he left the fantasy world last time. So basically, like, quick save rules.
Sure.
He's only allowed to bring food with him for some reason. He's not allowed to bring anything else in or out of either world. And they make the very, like, declarative statement, which I thought was kind of weird, when they're trying to puzzle all of this out. They're like, okay, well, the fact that there are hard rules means that, like, someone or some entity is doing this to you.
I mean, that's not very scientific, but
no,
yeah, okay.
No, it's not very scientific. It's a very theist point of view to start from.
Yeah, no kidding.
Assuming
the goddess
intent.
Oh,
assuming universal intent upon these actions.
Yeah, a biased universe, exactly.
Some kind of grand designer who is messing with him, because it is void of the common tropes of a goddess or a kami-sama who is isekai-ing him because he died or because he did some great deed.
Sure.
Or in other cases, because he's an absolute loser and they need you to bring in a sociopath to kill all the other isekai
yeah.
heroes.
Fucking losers. Yes. I do have to ask, and this is my isekai question that is very important to all isekais. Does he teach them about germs?
No, he does not teach them about germs.
He doesn't teach them to wash their hands when they're eating.
No.
Well, he's an asshole then.
No, he is. He is an asshole. There was
he's
okay,
a dick.
So this may shock and appall you even, but you may like to know that I recently overcome my fear of the written word, and I read a book.
This is shocking.
I know.
Please tell me it wasn't a light novel.
It was not a light novel.
Okay,
Although, wait, does Stephen King count as light novel?
Since those books are like 7 pounds, no, I think very literally it is not a light novel.
I read Fairy Tale by Stephen King, which is an isekai.
Wow, and that's the sequel. That's the sequel to Black House, I think, right?
Possibly. I didn't know if it was connected to any of his other stories, but it's about at least partially an old man who lives in a haunted house. So maybe.
Sure. An old man. And there's probably a little girl involved, right?
No. Well, there's a princess, but she's not a little girl.
Oh, weird. I thought there'd be a little girl involved in a fairy tale.
Well, not quite. It's about a prince, mostly.
All right.
A fairy tale prince. It's an isekai, essentially, about a, you know, a high school quarterback, super popular kid type, who befriends an old man who lives in a haunted house and finds a well that is a portal to a fantasy world on this guy's property. And when he goes to this fantasy world, he kind of gradually starts transforming into what is like the cultural collective perception of what a fairy tale prince is like. And he goes on a quest to save the kingdom from an evil monster, basically. It's a whole thing playing on like fairy tale tropes and fantasy tropes and stuff like that. But yeah. There was, when I was watching Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf, there was a quote from that book that kept playing in my head. And that was the main character, Charlie. He keeps telling himself, or another character who had been to this fantasy world had told him, a hero helps, a coward brings gifts.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. I could, that, you know, that's a very Stephen King line.
It's a very Stephen King line.
I can hear his voice in that.
And in the context of the story, it was like this character who was telling him that had been to this fantasy world to steal giant gold and magically de-age himself a number of times.
Oh, yeah. And this is why I asked, because I don't know if you remember The Talisman, right?
Sure. The Talisman.
The Stephen King, Peter Straub book.
Uh-huh.
The Talisman and Black House are both about these characters swapping in and out of this fantasy world, right?
Interesting. Okay,
that's why I assumed it was a sequel. Because
it might be. It might be. I'd have to look into it. I mean,
he's done this 2 times now.
Yeah, he may just be plagiarizing himself, or he may be dark towering.
Could be. Let me ask you this: Is there like a wolf man? Are there like kind of werewolf guys in that book?
There are wolves, but they're not werewolves. They're just kind of regular wolves.
Oh, do they talk?
No, they don't talk.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind then.
Okay.
What a disappointment.
Sorry to disappoint. But in the context of the story, that quote is about how he like goes to this fantasy world to take stuff from them without helping them with the evil king that is terrorizing the peasantry, right?
Yes. And in the Talisman, the bad guy is flipping over to the fantasy world to create an industrial revolution so that he could like build weapons and bring them back to our world, like a bunch of fake Uzis and shit.
Well, that is explicitly a concern of the old man that lives in the haunted house who owns the well.
Yeah.
The reason he's hiding it is because he doesn't want a person like that to go and fuck up this idealistic fantasy world.
No, you don't want that. You don't want that. It's very bad when that happens.
Any more than the demon lord is already fucking it up, right?
Sure.
But he feels bad because he goes there and he brings them stuff like, you know, fancy clothes and like prepackaged food and tennis shoes.
Yeah. Tennis shoes.
Specifically yellow Converse is made in a visual allegory of. And he feels guilty that he like doesn't stay and try and help these people more, right?
Sure. Well, the prime directive, I mean, come on.
And that is exactly what this guy in Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf, is doing. He is going there and hanging out with sexy elf ladies and going on adventures and stealing gold that I guess he can't really take back to the real world with him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be an office loser. But that aside, you know, he's going there to have a good time. He's literally treating it like a video game, even if they're not leaning into the tropes of that genre. He's not teaching them about germs. He's not setting up advanced medical techniques, right? He's not being a force for positive change. He's just trying to get his rocks off by shooting spells with a big titty blonde elf by his side. And who can blame him, really? But I guess it just made it, that quote ring more true for me.
Sure.
A coward brings gifts.
Yeah, or, you know, just tell them to wash their hands. I mean, I really feel like that's just the easiest possible thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you love this show.
I can't lie that it has a bit of charm. It has a bit of a charm to it. I do like that it is about, like, her just coming to the human world and being like, actually, no, I don't want to go back to the fantasy world quite yet, because I want to stay here and eat sushi, because I've never had, like, fish before. I've only ever had boiled meat and, like, potatoes.
Yeah, sure. And then she introduces a bunch of, you know, exotic diseases into the population and causes a pandemic, and most people in Japan die.
I mean, that would be a... there's got to be an isekai that's done that premise by this point, right?
Oh, you better believe it.
Yeah, invasive species isekai.
Oh, yeah. Well, Gate and Newgate, right, are kind of playing that idea, except it's like isekai gates open and a bunch of monsters come out, right?
Yeah.
That's more common than, like, you know, pox blankets.
I don't know. I'm pretty turned off by how often they try and make an excuse for this elf lady to be naked in every episode. That's not great, but it does have some high quality food animation, so yeah, I'll probably stick it out, but I cannot recommend it to people. I cannot in good conscience tell people to actually go out and watch this.
This is an anime made specifically for George Costanza.
Yep.
Just sex and food in a beautiful combination.
I'm George Costanza now.
You're George now.
So,
wow.
Yeah, I had to go back and see. I had to go back and see if there's anything. And the answer is no. It's still only bad anime this season. But turns out that I'm a worse person than I had first assumed. And maybe I like stuff that is bad.
I don't think there's a maybe about it. You just went over that whole show with like a fine tooth comb.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty ashamed of myself right now, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, you should be.
I don't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
Can we take a break?
Let's take a break. Everybody, we've been reinserted into the machine. Our consciousness has flickered back into existence, which means one thing: we'll have to argue about anime.
My brain needle itches.
Stop that. Stop poking at it.
I can't get the connection quite right.
let me say this. I try not to talk about anime when I'm not in the pod, but sometimes it leaks out. You know, I've talked about my watch partners before, and occasionally I do have disagreements with them, leading into long educational seminars they try not to sleep through. And one of them did bring up an inflammatory point. They accused me, and I still try to get over it. This was so hurtful. They accused me of having 90s bias.
My God. How gauche.
And me, of all people, I was very offended. I was offended and taken aback because, of all people, I do not have 90s bias. I lived through the 90s. I know what it was like. It was fucking awful.
We were there, folks.
There was one color palette, and everyone used it on everything regardless of context.
There was one color, and it was Lisa Frank Rainbow. No, I think it is. I think it's patently ridiculous to accuse you of having 90s bias. That is coming from someone like me who legitimately has 90s nostalgia bias. listen, game recognized game, and you're not one of us.
No, absolutely not. I fucking hate that shit. But the question inevitably led to, if I don't have 90s bias, then what is it? What is causing this argument? Because we were talking about some 2000s anime.
There it is. There it is. They were accusing you of only liking 90s anime.
Yes, because I was rightly pointing out that, as we all know this, the early to mid 2000s was the darkest era in the history of anime. This is not a point that can be argued. I'm sorry,
well,
but this is the truth.
Well, let's not get hasty with our words so far.
It's not hasty. We've had almost a decade and a half to make this judgment.
Listen, the wheels of justice move very slowly, and the wheels of anime move even slower. I would say that maybe you are not seeing the whole picture here objectively when you say the early 2000s has the worst anime. I personally think that's wrong. I would actually posit to say the downfall, the real true dark age of anime, started in the 2010s, and arguably we are currently still in.
Yeah, see, I just think what you're identifying is the 2000s hangover. You're experiencing a sort of body lag.
You think this is all carryover suck from the early 2000s?
I think in your case it must be, because, you know, it's not just the shows, right? I mean, there are larger cultural trends that lend themselves to a dark age, you know?
Okay, I'm willing to hear you out.
We're talking about the flow of culture.
These are the building blocks that have made anime what it is from the start all the way till now.
Exactly.
I see where you're going. Now I'm willing to hear out your argument. Yeah, tell me why, because I really am interested to know why you think that time period is the worst.
What I'm identifying here is, and I think this actually explains your point of view, perhaps you'll disagree, but you see, because culture flows in this particular way, and unfortunately follows us chronologically, the terrible, horrible crimes that were committed in the early 2000s, they are filtered through the 2010s. So what you're experiencing is sort of the dregs of the awful era.
You're saying that I'm punching at the shadow boxing after image when
yes,
I really should be keeping my eye on the prize. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying you are downstream from the guy who's pissing in the river.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead. Make your claim.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead. Yeah, just go ahead.
I will go ahead.
You do that.
Let me school you a little bit. Let me school you, because clearly you've forgotten. In your old age, you are becoming dementia riddled and you're forgetting what happened. I shouldn't even have to say this, but, you know, 2000s was when anime Beatles-ized the U.S. Obviously, anime was a thing here. I'm not saying it wasn't. You know, we did the whole Ghost of the Shell thing. We did the Akira thing. We did the fan subbing mail away for tapes thing. We did Pokemon, right? I know all this. But the early 2000s was when it became cultural. You know, it gelatinized and kind of seeped and it formed all around us. The 2000s was when kids were wearing Naruto headbands to school. That was not happening before.
As loath as I am to give you credit in your argument, the first volume of Naruto that I bought was in 2003, and my life has been irreparably damaged ever since then.
Yes, I want to say, if we look at the Wikipedia page, for example, of Tokyo Pop, which are, you know, guilty of a lot of crimes.
Man, there's a blast from the past.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of them. They did start up in 1997. So they were hitting their stride right as 2000 came in. I want to say 2002 was probably their biggest year. They did fold pretty fast after that. Borders, Walden Books, Barnes & Noble.
And they weren't even wrapped in plastic, folks. You could just walk in and read them.
You could just walk in and read them. Now, they were the ones where they had flipped everything so you could read left to right, which is, again, much like modern American dubbing, is absolutely a crime. I do believe those people should be put to death. Like that.
Yeah, no, that's
what were they
probably
thinking?
The worst thing that I ever heard. But,
awful.
You know, the puny American brain brought up on our education system in those years, it probably would have melted at the strain of trying to go from right to left to right.
It's true. We were not taught about other countries to begin with in school. That's just an American thing. So, yeah, it would have been difficult.
We all grew up in little communities like The Giver, where they hit us from the outside world.
Yeah. So this is my first point. And I think this is the establishing element of the dark ages of the 2000s, because suddenly Japan, this is a revenue stream. These dumbass gaijin, this is a gold mine. I mean, their parents don't even know what's in these comic books. You know, they'll just buy whatever.
It's free money, Jerry.
Unfortunately, this also coincided with the rise of Moe.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 9/11.
Well, 9/11, I can't directly attribute Moe to 9/11, but I'm not willing to disregard that argument entirely. I will hear that case. The 2000s introduced us as Americans, Moe, like Moet, but mm-hmm. Moe. And you know these things. I'm talking about Toradora.
Mm.
I'm talking about Digicherit. I'm talking about Lucky Star.
Oh, no.
I'm talking about Tokyo Mew Mew.
Oh, God.
You know exactly the cultural phenomenon that I am discussing. Weird little high school girls that look like elementary school girls, and they got massive eyes, and everything is chibi-fied, and it's awful. It's truly awful. And as a culture, we still have not even begun to assemble some kind of, I don't know, some kind of vaccine to this thing. It continues to this day, but this was the era where it hit on a completely unsuspecting populace. We were not ready for Moetan.
I never was, to be fair. I the rise of Moe stuff is definitely one of those like bumps when I look at my personal anime history, where I was like in middle school and in grade school, I was a Pokemon kid, I was Digimon, I was
you were Shonen.
Yeah, Shonen, Shaman King, big DBZ kid, right? Like, yep. Talking about who would win in a fight, Charizard or Goku, kind of anime kid in grade school.
You know, that's one of the things these Gen Zers make fun of us millennials for, is the like corny ass who would win in a fight thing.
Power scaling argument stuff.
That has fully been attributed to us.
That's our boomer generation trait.
It really is, yeah.
Oh no. Oh God.
Yep.
I mean, I can't say they're wrong. You know, for me personally, I was that kid. I had those arguments with my friends,
yep,
about who was cooler, Cloud from Final Fantasy VII or Vegeta. Who was the cooler emo badass?
The answer is neither. They're both dorks.
They're both dork-ass dorks.
They're both dork-ass losers.
So, you know, I guess they got me pinned on that one. I'll take the L.
You will absolutely take that L.
I'll take that L.
Again, I think the desperate chasing of the Pokemon DBZ Shonen money pales in comparison to the rise of Moe, which has had devastating consequences on the anime community.
I'm still trying to figure out what the appeal was at that time, at that specific juncture. Kids like me, who grew up on Fox Kids, you know, Saturday morning anime block, and then getting into high school and going into the whole Moe, like, ooh-woo kind of aesthetic of, I don't know how to describe it, like Orin High School host club, fruits basket, like soft boy, soft boy manga.
Well, I will say, you know, this is actually, and I don't think this is coincidental, but unlike 9/11, I do think there is a direct correlation with this and the rise of emo. These are linked phenomena.
Sure.
Here I holds up Spork, Penguin of Doom thing. Mm-hmm. These are connected phenomena. And the whole emo thing, the like twee bullshit emo thing that they cultivate in that culture is sort of some American moe. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they're the same three letters.
Whoa.
Yeah, think about that.
Keanu Reeves mind blown gif right now.
And, you know, I could stop there and it could be a pretty convincing argument, but I do have more. But in the interest of fairness, I'm interested in hearing your rebuttal.
Well, okay. And maybe I think I do. And hear me out here.
All right.
And in light of your presentation, this may be a metastasizing of the problem. Because I think that we can directly attribute the rise of, and, you know, these aren't exactly the same, but I am going to lump them in because they are enjoyed, I think, generally by the same type of person. Like moe high school romance / a high school, like, harem, like moe harem type stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
We can draw a direct line between the rise of that to what I call the smartphone era of 2010s anime, which is when we start getting all of these smartphone gacha games that have anime tie-ins and spin-offs from them.
Sure.
I am talking about stuff like, and I've talked about it before, Uma Musume. I'm talking about Granblue Fantasy.
Uh-huh,
I'm talking about Azure Lane.
Sure.
You know, if we want to be a little bit more contemporary, moving closer to the end of the 2010s, we can even talk about the rise of Prince gacha type stuff, like that Disney Hogwarts gacha game.
Oh yeah, Twisted Fantasy.
Yeah, Twisted Fantasy. I think that all of that, the impulse of collecting these characters, right, comes directly from moe anime, moe night light novels, and like moe dating sim computer games that were fucking everywhere in the early 2000s.
I
think that, you know, kind of crystallized this idea that, and I hate this for how true it is and for just how creepy it sounds, but this is all, it's all about collecting girls, right?
Yeah.
It's collecting.
Well, and this goes back, obviously, skipping over either one of our arguments, but this goes back to in the 90s starting to adapt the dating games.
Yeah, yes.
You know, canon and whatnot into anime, and then evolving like a cancer.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that specifically the gacha game ones, those games are created after the fact from people seeing like, oh, do people like it when you have a lot of girls that you can choose between? What if we just made a game that was about getting girls that you choose? What if that was just the whole thing?
It is the most evil thing in the world. Is these horrible, like, gacha extraction machines.
You know, I think that if we had to point our finger at one, like, connecting thread between these two eras, it would have to be Strike Witches, I would say, personally. Which, for the very lucky out there who don't know what that is, that's the anime / light novel series / trading card game / mobile phone gacha game / board game.
The prequel to Brave Witches. They probably know that.
That is, the entire premise is the moeification of, like, World War II fighter planes.
Yeah. Yeah, truly one of the most awful things you could imagine.
Yeah.
God, it's so awful.
I think that really is one of the original kind of like gotcha series that spans this gap between the rise of moe design in anime, of a focus on like middle school and high school like girls, which is bad, and I don't like that. I never like that. It's really fucking gross.
It's really weird.
And then turning those into a fucking hallucinogenic drug that makes you go crazy for just the absolute worst possible thing that's ever been created.
Waifuism.
Yes. That basically sums up my argument, is what you are describing moe in the early 2000s is... It laid the building blocks of what has become the cult of waifu in the 2010s.
Yes,
which I think is way worse.
It's absolutely a disease. It's truly evil. I will say the current waifuism did strip out a lot of the childlike elements. You know, the sickly sweet cuteness element has subsided in the things you are describing since the rise of moe, which doesn't make it good, but I think it is a little bit better aesthetically and perhaps morally.
Well, I will concede that point. I cannot argue against it. I 100% like it better when they are objectifying adult women
or something approaching adult women, at least.
Yeah,
you know,
approximating.
In that sense, let me. That brings me to my second element that I feel has been superseded by the isekai. I do think it was left on the roadside when isekai took its cultural spot, because you don't see these as much anymore, even if they are sort of related in a lot of ways. But we've described many times the phenomenon of the girl in the box.
A classic trope.
And in the early 2000s, we had plenty of girls in boxes. In the 90s, we also had girls in the boxes. The 2000s kind of morphed it into what I would say is the girl in the bedroom.
Okay, go.
do you know what I mean?
You're going to need to clarify a little bit more there.
I am talking about an anime boy who wakes up one day and there is a naked girl in his bed.
Oh, this was okay, sure.
One
yes.
of the most popular genres of anime.
Hey, I mean, it still is. We just talked about Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf.
Yes, yeah. Though that had a setup, right? That had a setup. I'm talking about shows where this was, I mean, that was literally what happened. It would be like a guy just has a girl essentially as a pet, sometimes literally. In stuff like Chobits, you know, she is sort of a alien robot thing.
Sure.
But she is both his girlfriend and his pet, who is just living in his room. I'm talking about stuff like Rosen Maiden, where, speaking of moe, a little girl just appears in this boy's room. I'm talking about stuff like Dears, where a sexy alien appears in a boy's room and describes herself as his slave.
The film Weird Science.
Yes, we've got weird sciences happening all over the place. And I would extend this to things like Aiori Oshi, where a guy wakes up and there's a girl who is not a robot or an alien, but is just in his room and has declared herself his wife.
Well,
this is kind of a subversion of this. This happens a lot.
That girl was not a stranger to him. I want to point that out. That was a whole thing about like arranged marriages, and they were childhood friends, if you will, Osana Najimi.
Yes, I don't want to completely ignore the context behind these things, but come on. This is similar to the other subgenre, which is stuff like Hanokyu Maid Tai, where a boy will just suddenly find himself surrounded by, in these cases, usually maids. Beautiful women maids who are his to command.
Well,
because he's moved into his grandfather's mansion, which yes. is something that's happened so many times in anime. It's fucking insane.
I think what you're describing is the end stage evolution of the generic, like, early 2000s harem, right? Where the author has to keep coming up with these inane reasons why this person would be, A, involved with one attractive lady, and B, why he would have a throng of attractive women throwing themselves at him, right?
Yes, I do, like, think
I cannot think of a reason why this loser would be surrounded by beautiful women, so I'm just going to have the plot happen, and he can just be really confused by it, and that's like a joke, right?
Yeah, it's a sort of atrophying of the male fantasy, because as we approached the 2000s and onward, men... especially men in let's say anime circles, were finding it harder and harder to believe that they themselves could ever interact with a woman in any sort of normal way. So the traditional harem where a guy is just like around women no longer made sense. What had to happen, the evolution that had to happen, was that the women had to become either aliens or sentient pets or mind-wiped girls who only experience life through the lens of the shut-in man, whose entire life revolves around the man. You know, we're talking about stuff like Sekirei, or in some other cases like Ah, My Goddess or To Love Rue, right? These are like mythological creatures or aliens that decide to grant somebody's wish of just mm-hmm. having sort of a pet woman.
And I view those as kind of following in the vein of stuff like Tenchi Muyo and Love Hina, the real early super popular kind of harem stuff that took off in the late 90s and early 2000s. I think that a lot of those are trying to crib on each other's styles for that slot of who has the best harem, right? Which again ties into the whole waifuization of like female characters in anime in general.
Oh yeah, no, I'm absolutely making the point that these are continuations, but also deepening a very disturbing trend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other trends as well that I think kind of rose and fell within the 2000s that were just as disturbing. One of them being the, you know, you did describe a manga you read that was basically the same thing, but stuff like Onegai Teacher or I, My, Me, Strawberry Eggs, or perhaps the worst one, My Wife is a High School Girl, where it's just straight up child bride shit.
Oh, you should be arrested for this.
Yeah, it's just pedophiles. And these are presented as, you know, not horrifying tragedies, but quirky romances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That has not died, obviously. We've talked about them recently. But I feel like they have become, at the very least, less popular.
Sure. And, okay, and so hear me out, because I think that what that trend has spawned into the modern era in the 2010s may be a little bit worse. Because I view that as, again, a corollary to what I view in the 2010s as the rise of the edgelord harem shows, or high school exploitation shows, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we have these anime that you're talking about, which are generally, I would say, dramedy, rom-com, kind of romance-focused, not exactly super out there in terms of world building. Occasionally you get stuff like gender swap or body swap type stuff, right?
Oh yeah, I didn't even go into those.
No, you have the robots and you have alien girls and goddesses that, you know, want to hang out with losers for some reason. And then when that became kind of blasé, and this is kind of what I think this was 2006, 2007, that we get introduced to shows like Elfin Lied, which I think is a bridge between what you're talking about, what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm getting into Elfin Lied. Don't preempt me.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm throwing it out there because I'm talking about shows like High School of the Dead, like high school D by D, DXD, if you will.
DXD. Yes.
DD. High school DD.
Samurai Girl, Real Bout High School, Iki Tausen, Tenja Tenge, Witchblade, Elfin Lead, Gunslinger Girl, Queen's Blade.
Prison School.
These are the battle girls. Well, Prison School, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And
these are the girls fight each other by ripping each other's clothes off.
Yes.
Genre.
Yes.
Caged Heat, if you will.
And so that's, I see the rise of those type of shows in the 2010s as a direct, not backlash, but I guess shockwave of the, like the moe stuff you're talking about, and the later harem stuff, where it's like, all right, how can we have all of these girls, but also their clothes are getting blown off because people like violence and sex, and they're fighting each other, and the main character is a Light Yagami knockoff who's actually the smartest kid in school, and he has a chip on his shoulder to get revenge on all the people who wronged him, right?
Well, sometimes it's that. In a lot of these, there really isn't one of those guys. Like, a lot of them, it's, you know, Tenja Tenge, Iki Tausen, these are, like, female-led, and they kind of came up around Moe as well. You know, Iki Tausen was 2003. Tenja Tenge was 2004.
Just to clarify for our other listeners like myself who only know Iki Tausen as the American title, Battle Vixens.
I had never heard that. I had never heard it called
Battle
Vixens.
It was on the cover. It was on the cover of the manga volumes. I don't know what to tell you.
I didn't know. I only heard it as Iki Tausen. But these are all, you know, early to mid 2000 phenomenon, I guess. You know, Elfin Lied was 2004, mm-hmm. Witchblade was 2006, Gunslinger Girl 2003. This is coinciding with the Moe stuff. You know, you could call it counter programming, which I think is what you're getting at. But yeah, these are peers.
I mean, okay, well, you think that they at least break even with each other in terms of cultural damage?
I think so. I really do. I think Battle Girl is just so egregious. The thing is, Battle Girl kind of has cultural precedence, you know? We've had
sure.
Battle Girl. You know, the 80s fantasy market in America was partially built on Battle Girl. You know, you had your Red Sonjas and all that stuff, right? That was a character. And then it kind of died down and was, you know, much like in a lot of manga and anime, revived 20 years later in Japanese culture.
All right, well, I guess I'll concede that point, but I still think, you know, these are linked in an inextricable way.
Sure. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They're all linked. But as I've pointed out, the 2000s are clearly much, much darker and more insidious.
Why else would you make that claim? Because so far what we've done is a back and forth where you basically lay down a trend and then I show how the modern trends made that much worse.
I think they made it much better. I think your last line of defense, and this is so obvious, but I shouldn't even bring it up to you if I wanted to win this conversation, but your last line of defense is the rise of isekai.
Well, I was leading up to that, but, you know, I can't deny the fact that when I Google the phrase 2010s anime, I'm greeted by hundreds and hundreds of links to fucking Reddit threads saying like, wow, 2010s was the best time for isekai anime. This is the decade of isekai.
Yep.
Isn't isekai the best?
Yup.
So I was leading up to that, but yeah, I don't know how you're gonna get around this one, because like I said, 2010s was the decade of isekai. It gave us some of the worst offenders that we've ever talked about on this show. It gave us Sword Art Online. It gave us ReZero. It gave us Konosuba, Shield Hero, Tanya the Evil. I've got a list of 53 isekai right in front of me that came
the
out
rap
between
sheet is long.
Yeah, that came out between 2010 and 2019. None of them are good. I think what we're seeing there is, and we've talked about, you know, the worst parts of isekai before, but isekai is essentially a death cult. It is a cultural media trend centered around literally the world being so bleak and unhospitable to these loner, like, otaku nerd ass dork dudes who can't talk to people, can't talk to their classmates, can't talk to women, have no jobs, and then them realizing that the only way out is to get hit by a fucking truck and get transported to a world where they are literally worshipped by everyone they come in contact with.
Go to heaven. It's die and go to heaven.
Yeah,
that is really it.
It's get hit by a truck and get 72 anime girls in paradise.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, that is it. Sorry to argue with that.
So I think Isekai takes the round in this one.
It's really hard to argue against Isekai. We've made ourselves so clear on that point.
I've just got one other point I want to make about the 2010s that I'm going to couple with Isekai. And I kind of put this as its own category here, but 2010s gave us Attack on Titan. Which I think is really responsible for so much social degradation in the last decade or so. In fact, I would say that Attack on Titan is almost solely responsible for the rise of fascism in the Western Hemisphere. I am going to make that claim.
Wow. Well, I will say, to take us out of here, the 2000s gave us Fate's Day Night and the entire Fate State phenomenon, which I think is obviously so much bigger and more culturally relevant than anything ever given to us by Attack on Titan, and will continue to weigh on the population for hundreds of years to come. So, yeah, I don't think there's an argument there. I think we've made our point, haven't we?
I think the only point that we've made is that maybe any decade that anime exists in is by definition not good. Maybe all of anime is the darkest period for anime.
Next time we talk about this, I will go to bat for the 60s.
Oh, okay.
I will fucking go. I will go on you for the 60s.
Oh, is this going to be our Miyazaki moment? We're going to put our foot in the sand and say everything made after 1965 is trash.
You'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. I'm sad and depressed and just so defeated by talking about anime once again.
I've defeated Nate, guys, so we're going to take off. We're going to wrap the episode up now that he's on the mat. We've already counted to 10.
Thrown in the towel.
Listen to the show. Go back and listen to the old episodes.
Please.
Listen to the new episodes. Follow on the fucking accounts, you guys.
Oh,
follow
the
accounts.
He's doing my bit that I usually do it.
You've done it okay. Too many times in a row.
I'm having privileges taken away. Okay, bye.
Hey, my favorite anime got canceled. Surely it must be the animator's fault. They probably just decided arbitrarily they didn't want to do it anymore.